How do trees access the internet?
I don't know, Charlene. How do trees access the internet?
They log in.
Another dad joke. Well, today we're joined by Leanne Linsky, the founder of the online comedy platform Plausible. She says the creative process behind writing, performing comedy, and how humor can help reframe difficult situations and provide a fresh perspective.
Stick around until the end to learn how laughter can be a powerful tool for personal growth and transformation. Let's dive in. Welcome to Rewrite Your Story, the podcast where change begins with you.
We're your hosts, Stephen and Charlene.
As professional coaches and mentors trained in various modalities, we have helped hundreds of people
bridge the gap between the person they are
and the person they want to be.
We bring you conversations with real people who have overcome real setbacks.
You will walk away with practical steps to find more clarity, alignment, and success in any area you want to improve.
So join us and discover how you have the power to overcome, to change, and to rewrite your story.
So pick up the pen. Your new chapter starts now.
Leanne, we're so excited and you're joining us from Washington. Welcome to the show.
Welcome,
Leanne. Thank you. I'm excited to be here. I love stories. So this is so cool.
Well, it's all about stories and we're so interested in learning about your story because stories just encourage us and have the power to heal people. So Leanne, tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into this journey as a comedian.
I actually worked for a corporation I went to school for business and then I got a job with a company. And then a year later, I went to another company and stayed there for almost 13 years. And I thought that's what I was going to do. And that's what I was going to retire from. Well, during that time, I did a lot of public speaking and everything. So I thought I'm going to take a comedy writing class so I can be a little bit more funny. And so I did, and I loved it. And then a coworker suggested I take improv classes at a Second City Training Center. Now, this is all while I was living in Las Vegas. I immediately fell in love with it. I'm like, no matter what I do in life, like I'm going to take all of their classes. Well, lo and behold, almost 13 years into my job, I was laid off. And my friends were like, hey, you said if you didn't have that job, you would move to New York. I was like, oh, someone was listening to me. So I started signing up for improv classes in New York on my vacation time. So one of the guys I met in New York was like, hey, I'm moving to New York and I have a sublet. Do you want to split it this summer? And I was like, well, I'll think about it. And he's like, you have 1 hour. I was like, oh. So I went outside, went for a walk, came back. I called him. I said, okay, I'm in. And a month later, I packed up 2 suitcases and moved to New York City.
Why New York? Why the attraction to New York around comedy?
So when I was taking improv classes, one of my instructors, she said to me, you know, if you're really serious about this, you might consider going and studying with, because in Las Vegas, I was studying with the Second City, which is based out of Chicago, which I'm originally from the Chicagoland area. So I'm very familiar. So they had a training center in Vegas in which I was a student. And then the instructor there was like, if you really want to check it out, you also want to maybe try out another theater that's really known for improv in New York and kind of put yourself out there or even this other theater in Chicago and try that. So the one in Chicago I couldn't do because it was 5 weeks and I didn't have that much vacation time. But the one in New York I could do because it was 2 weeks. So I went off and I did that. And I was like, oh, New York, I could live here. Like, this would be amazing. And I just fell in love with the city. I don't know. There's just a whole energy to New York. Plus, there's a thriving comedy scene in both improv and stand-up. And so when I eventually moved to New York City, I just fully immersed myself. I signed up for classes. I started doing shows with an improv group or three. And then I started an open mic with a friend, and he eventually dropped off. But I ended up running that open mic for 7.5 years in New York. And then I brought it to California when I moved to California as a show and produced shows. So I was producing in New York and then California. I don't know. It just snowballed. And yeah, but New York is amazing. I just love it.
Just for our audience, do you want to just speak into the different types of comedy? So you've mentioned improv, you mentioned stand-up, and then open mic. Just explain them to us.
Sure. So improv is improvisation, and there's two forms. The first, most people are familiar with from the show, Whose Line Is It Anyway? And it's short form improv where they do short form, we call them games, and then we'll get suggestions from the audience and do silly things. And they're very quick, right? Long form is the other type of improvisation. And long form is basically where you have an ensemble of 6 or 8 people, typically, and someone will step forward and get a suggestion from the audience. And then they do a whole half hour show based on that one suggestion. And that's long form because it's not game, but it's a series of scenes and scene works that kind of like have patterns to them. And there's a structure to it that the audience doesn't necessarily see, but we know to play to. And then it kind of wraps up and the audience is like, oh, how did they do that with no script at the end? Yeah. So that's improv. And then stand-up comedy is what we see comedians like Jerry Seinfeld or Chelsea Handler or Whitney Cummings or Dave Chappelle, like all these different people, right? Where they stand up, one person with a microphone, and tell jokes. That's stand-up comedy. And how comedians get better and how comedians work out their jokes, part of the writing process is actually doing open mics. And so open mics are not booked shows. Open mics can be held in coffee shops, bars, clubs, anywhere. And they're typically not a ticketed show. It's kind of where just comedians show up because you never know what you're going to get. People are just working out ideas or jokes that haven't been fully thought out or polished yet, or they're rehearsing and things like that. Oftentimes there's open mics for musicians and a variety and stuff. And it's very entertaining because you never know who's going to come and show up. It's real. I love open mics. Yeah, they're very fun.
It just made me think when you were saying that, the open mic, I didn't realize there was so much preparation in being a comedian.
Oh, yes. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. People are like, oh, you're funny. The writing process or the joke process?
The whole thing. Yeah. The whole rhyming process.
Yeah. So very rarely, for me anyway, I speak from my own experience, and I do see this a lot. Very rarely do I, or most comedians, probably come up with a joke that's like a 10 out of a 10, you know, right out of the gate. Sometimes we think of an idea or a premise, or maybe we think of a punchline, but we don't have the setup, or vice versa. Or we think of things and they're you know how when you write a story, right? When we write a story, typically our first version, we have a lot of information in it that doesn't need to be shared because it doesn't move the story forward. It's just, you know, a lot of random things and rabbit holes. So once with comedy, it's the same thing. Sometimes we have an idea or a situation and we write it all out and there's a lot of words there. But the trick with being a stand-up comedian is we have to be economical with our words and get to the point very quickly. Because if we don't, someone's getting up and going to the bathroom. They're going to get another drink at the bar. We've lost an audience. I mean, they expect laughs and often. So writing a joke is more like writing out a story than mining every sentence for where the funny is so that we can kind of tell maybe a theme or a thread throughout our stand-up set, you know, around a particular topic. But every 2 lines, we should be getting a laugh.
Do you find when you're going through the whole preparation that you're actually making yourself laugh, or do you have to like retain yourself?
Yeah, sometimes I make myself laugh. Sometimes I make myself. Yeah, it's enjoyable. You know, it's kind of like, oh, that's kind of funny. And it's not like I can sit down and just write a bunch of jokes. Sometimes it's like something will happen. It will spark an idea or inspire me for something. Sometimes I can sit down, like I've done it as exercises before, where like I have this much amount of time. I'm just going to write. So I'll do stream of conscious, or I'll pick a topic, or I'll pick 2 things that don't make sense together and see how I can bring those 2 things together. To me, it's kind of wordplay. It's deconstructing an idea, looking at things from another perspective is always really fun. Putting myself in someone else's shoes, I love doing that. Looking at it, like a lot of times I talk about relationships and that's a lot of my humor. So I try to look at it from the other person, my boyfriend or my husband's point of view. And that's usually funnier to me of like, what must they think about me? You know? So that's kind of how I actually rewrite my story all the time. And one of the things that I just realized I completely skipped is why I got into comedy is during that time that people had suggested that I take a class and that I was doing a lot of public speaking. I had also just experienced my second divorce. And if there is one way to kind of like reframe my, and for me, I was looking for a way to like, this is a great way to reframe my perspective on life, because all the improv exercises and things like that also play into how I write stand-up. And we have to be other characters. We have to, you know, an exercise in class might be rant as though you're mad at something, and then they'll change it and they'll be like, take the person you're mad at and be them and rant about yourself from their point of view. And it's so eye-opening and also hilarious, you know? And so when I write stand-up, I kind of go through all of those things. And, you know, it's, I don't know, I have a blast doing it. I like looking for the weird, the unusual, things that are very personal to me also is very helpful.
It sounds like a very rich also personal development process too. Like when you're going through those things and you're going through difficult situations in your life, it's another way of having a different perspective and putting a bit of like a laugh to it. So you're having another look at that situation from a different point of view.
Absolutely. When I was in New York, and I was doing a lot of improvising, improv shows, I also wrote my one-woman show. And my one-woman show was all about my life in Vegas, because I lived in Vegas for 16 years. And during that time, I had been married and divorced twice. And I decided, and that bothered me. I mean, I don't know anybody who went through a divorce and it really didn't bother them. It bothered me a lot. And I remember there was a point where I was going through that the second time, and I was laying on my bedroom floor, and I just remember like, I'm going to start saying yes to things and doing things different, because obviously what I'm currently doing is not working. And how do I go about changing my life and trying new things and, I don't know, just getting away from the same. So that helped a lot. And then, so when I went to New York and I wanted to write a one-woman show, it was like, what do I want to write about? Well, what do I know best? Divorce, heartache, bad relationships, dating. And so I threw all of those things into a show. So like in the show, I played other characters. I played it from maybe my ex-husband's point of view, my parents' point of view, my brother's point of view, even had a conversation with, you know, a higher power of God. And what were they telling me? Like, what are you doing? You know, like all of those things. But doing that and going through, I spent a year writing that. So it went through many iterations, many different, you know, a lot of things that didn't just get brought to the stage at all. And then when I first put up that show, it was about 25 minutes long. That's what you call a half hour show. And then a year later, it was then a 55 minute show. So I premiered it in New York. I took it to Delaware and Washington, D.C., and back to New York again. So when I brought it back to New York, it was now 55 minutes and it was more polished. You know, my director and I, after each show, would examine what got laughs, what didn't, what pieces need to be improved, what pieces needed to go throughout a whole year. And for me, what I really learned about it was that my story is always changing, because as I grow and evolve as a person, my perspective changes. And things that I thought were important or something then, I'd make new discoveries. So when people, after that year, people were like, oh, are you going to continue that and maybe bring it to the West Coast or resurrect it later? I was like, oh, but I can't, because that's not who I am anymore. You know, that's not necessarily my perspective or my point of view, but I feel like it brought so much closure to be able to sit and play in that and reexamine it all the time, but not just from in my head, but how others are responding to it, what other people reading reviews and seeing what they took away from it, fascinating to me.
What an amazing, powerful way to rewrite your story by bringing humor into a place that was hurtful. Like, that is so awesome. Yeah,
thanks.
Amazing.
Yeah.
How did you go from a full-time employee to making this your career?
Well, that's smoke and mirrors. Although I was doing, like when I left New York, I was doing, I don't know, 15 shows a month or something. The truth is I don't really get paid for comedy. Most comedians don't get paid. We get a free burger and a beer. We get maybe some gas money. Sometimes it's an exchange. You know, if I put you in this show, will you put me in your show? Like, there's all this bartering going on, you know? And sometimes people will throw me, you know, some decent money at something. But unfortunately, it's not enough to pay all my bills. So I've always pretty much maintained some sort of job throughout the time. There was a period where I wasn't doing anything else but that for some time, but it wasn't necessarily completely self-sustaining. So there were a couple of years where I wasn't working. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for being so honest, because a lot of people think that this is like a full-time career and that you can make a load of money out of it.
No, actually, so in open mics, there's a lot of free open mics, but comedians have to sign up in advance and you only get 5 minutes, maybe more, depending on how popular the mic is and how much time people are willing to stay and watch you. But typically it's like 5 minute spots. And often now people have to pay for those in-person mics. People have to they get charged $5 for 5 minutes or $10 for 10 minutes, things like that. And I, from what I understand from friends in New York, you know, that's become more popular and even more pricey. And when we want to be booked in clubs, it's hard to do. You have to take their classes. You have to hang out at the club all the time and get to know everybody and be liked by everybody and also be good. And then maybe they'll let you host an open mic, which is an unpaid position. And they'll let you do that for a year because that gives you clout, you know, and also hosting experience, which is actually a very important skill set. But you don't get paid for it. And maybe you'll get a guest spot. Don't get paid for that. Maybe a free drink here or there. But typically, if you want guest spots, which are anywhere from 5 or 10 minutes or less, let's say, usually 5 minutes at a club, you're not getting paid. A lot of those guest spots, the comedians have to go outside. And you know how you see people in the street like, hey, do you like comedy? Want to get a comedy ticket? That's super popular in Times Square and like on Hollywood Boulevard and things like that. It's called barking. The comedians have to go out there all afternoon and get people to buy comedy tickets. And then they get a minute of stage time for every ticket sold. And yeah, little did you know, that's how it works. So typically features will get paid. They'll get paid maybe a flat fee for their set. And features are like that longer set before the headliner, you know, a little longer than all the other guest spots. And then the headliner will get paid typically a flat fee, unless they're maybe really well known and have TV credits and they can negotiate, or their agent or manager can negotiate some sort of split of the door with a venue, but typically it's a flat fee. And yeah, and that's kind of how it goes. It can take a long time to get passed at a club. Like if there's a chain of clubs, they may pass you amongst their chain, but you know, you have to be fairly well along in your career in order to make that happen. And then that's some traveling and, you know, like I know a comedian who's been doing stuff for over 30 years. He's hilarious. Oh my goodness. He's so good. He got booked for a paid gig, got paid, let's say, $200. I'm just making up the number. I remember the story. I don't remember the amounts, but basically then he had to travel several hours outside of LA to do it. So he had to get a hotel and pay for his travel himself. So he was basically like $90 in the hole at the end of the time. He was in the red, but he had a paid show and was thrilled he got a paid show. Yeah.
I know in Australia, the arts were severely affected by COVID and a lot of performers were affected by it, and as everything closed down, and I'm assuming that was the same in the US. What was that time for you, and how did that lead you to what you're currently doing?
Yeah, so interestingly enough, once I moved from New York to LA, I suddenly found myself wasting a lot of time in traffic, because if you've ever been to LA, something could be super close, like it could be a mile or two away, yet it will take you hours to get there because the traffic is so terrible. And so I was like, how can I spend hours in traffic to get 5 minutes on stage and not get paid? Like, I can't even afford gas. What I wanted to do was start bringing things online. Now, this is August 2019 BC, before COVID, and I started doing open mics on Zoom. And when I first moved to Los Angeles area, I wanted to do them, and that was in like 2015-ish, that I was like, I should do them on Skype. Remember Skype? And people were like, no, I'm not going on Skype. So in August of 2019, I'm like, I'm going to do it on Zoom. And I started doing it on Zoom and connecting East Coast, West Coast people. And they're like, hey, this is really great. And then some other comedians were like, what? I'm never doing that. And then COVID happened and suddenly everybody was doing that. But during that time, I was like, you know what? There's something here. I can't replace in-person because I believe there's a magic to in-person events that we cannot replicate. But there is a gap between social media and in-person. And I wanted to bridge that gap because in comedy, it's super important for us to hear laughs in real time and to see people. And the existing technologies, although they were great for the pandemic, I heard a lot of the challenges from myself and others in entertainment that were limiting. So I thought, how do I scale this? How do I build something completely different that can have a bigger impact for entertainment? So I actually went back to school and got my master's in innovation and entrepreneurship at University of California, Irvine, during COVID, and got it involved, got a mentor or two, and started Plausible and how, like, the whole planning of it and everything. And then once I graduated, I ended up getting a team together and building Plausible so that it's our own technology and everything that we're using in order for comedians to have this virtual playground in order to not only perform and have a global reach, but also so that they can actually earn money based on their own ticket sales, which you can't, like I just explained, monetizing your comedy is really hard in the real world. So how can they get a hand up in jumping their, you know, moving their career forward, jumpstarting it. So that's how I got here.
Tell us a little bit about how Plausible works, like how from the comedian's point of view, but also from a person who just loves comedy and wants to subscribe.
Yeah. So think of it as like are you familiar with Etsy?
Yes.
Okay. So think of like the Etsy marketplace. You have all these people who make really cool things, and then you have people who want to buy them. So Plausible, we have all these comedians who are really funny and want to perform shows. And so Plausible, they have the scheduling tools, the virtual stage, the ticketing services, everything at their fingertips, and they can create it right there on Plausible. So like, think about it. If Zoom, Etsy, and Yelp had a baby for comedy. So like certain features that you're familiar with each, but completely designed for entertainment so that the comedians, they come on like this and they're live in real time, not pre-recorded. And then the audience, you as an audience member, you create your free account. You can look at the talent directory and see all of the comedians and learn about them on their profile pages. Or you can go into the show listings and register to watch a show. It'll tell you the date and the time, and you show up on the date and the time online, and you log in, and then you can see and hear the entire audience and the performer, and they can all see and hear you. And we don't have audio delays or cutouts, so when people laugh, the comedian can hear everybody laughing at the same time, and it doesn't cut them off. And you can see the whole audience, but the comedian remains larger and anchored, but you don't have to click through to see your audience. You can simply scroll and they'll move up and down your screen on a carousel. So that kind of like if you were in person in a club, you only see so many people until you move your head, you know? And so same with a comedian on stage, the lights are bright in our face. So we only see a few people in the front row, but with our mouse and the wheel, we can quickly read the room very quickly and see how we're doing.
What a brilliant concept.
What would you say is probably your biggest challenge going to this?
Ooh. So I think the biggest challenge is people, when I talk about Plausible, people tend to assume it's a Zoom or another technology that already exists. So when they log in or before they log in, they're like, oh, I can just do that on Zoom or I could do that here. So I think the biggest thing is for someone to log in and go, oh, this is what it is, you know, and actually see it and go, oh my gosh, this is different. Yet I understand the concept because I've experienced these other things. So I think that's just it, is getting people to see like it isn't exactly like something that they already have, but it can take the whole experience to another level. Yeah.
What is your vision for Plausible in the future? What are you looking to? Are you looking to expand? Are you looking to add other arts?
Yes. So what I'm really excited about, and the one funny challenge that I didn't realize I had, comedians think they have to ask permission. Like, can I do this on here? I'm like, of course you can. like there's no, like, we're so accustomed to be like, can I use your coffee shop for an open mic, or can I get a spot on your show? But here they can just log in and create their show and go. They don't have to ask me. But where I see it going, like other avenues, what I'm excited about is yes, there are other entertainers like that could benefit from something like this. So I am really happy to see that even comedians are starting to branch out of like the traditional stand-up show. And now they experimented with podcasting and in front of a live online audience, because it changes the whole vibe and energy of a room, you know? It brings like other people into it and they can hear each other laughing. They also are experimenting with improv on there, not just stand-up. So that is very, very, very fun to see. People, you know, really getting creative with the technology. And then also they're doing somewhat, and comedian who's a regular on there, she's really great. She just posted a midweek late night show. So she has a musician that they're going to be combining more of like a late night TV show kind of vibe. And yeah, so it's her and a fellow musician and a guest. And so they're going that avenue. And I just think there are so many opportunities for people to try new things. Even if you're doing a one person show, you're sharing your story and you want to incorporate humor into it. Like it's endless. And what also excites me about this and doing the research as I was putting this together, looking at the most popular, because everybody's live streaming. So this is another form of live streaming. It's become so popular. And people would say, Leanne, aren't you really pigeonholing yourself and making yourself small just doing comedy? But comedy is the second most popular genre of live stream, only second behind breaking news. So people are in serious need of laughs these days. Yeah.
Yeah.
And laughter is so much healing. Like,
yeah,
chilling in laughter.
So true.
Leanne, can we put you on the spot and give us a bit of a comedy example? You want me to throw you a topic?
I don't know. You know, it's funny because I'm not used to going anywhere. I do everything online and every day, all day. So when I went out and met people in real life, in person, it was so awkward. Because I kept forgetting to unmute myself. It's like, what is happening right now? Well, yeah.
Awesome.
That's awesome. I think it's so amazing what you're doing at the moment, and just taking that Plausible and opening it up to so many people. I know that there's different styles of like humor. Mm-hmm. Like you got the dry bars. What makes that different to the standard like stand-up comedies?
Yeah. Well, on Plausible, when comedians log in, we ask them to tell us about themselves for their profile. And they can select all the topics that they typically talk about in their comedy. And then they can also tell us if they're clean comedy, if they're suited for corporate work, if they're club oriented, they kind of tell us. And then when comedy fans log in, they tell us what they want to see. So that as we grow, we'll be able to match them up. And in the meantime, they can filter all of the selections based on what they like. And then they can see who pops up. Yeah.
I can just see Charlene joining and doing, you know, for her dad jokes, queen of dad jokes.
Oh, no.
I can just see you.
There's a great show one of our comedians has called One More Dad Joke. It's so funny.
Oh, she's definitely got it wrong.
Yes.
What advice would you give to someone who wanted to rewrite their life story in any area at the moment?
Oh my gosh. Just do it. Start. There's best thing I ever did was learning how to do that. Honestly, changed my life, you know, and yeah, I think just kind of like, what if you were to write your story from the other person's perspective? What if, like, honestly, take a dip into that pool and see what that, like, what would they say about the situation? You know, what would your mailman say about the situation? What would kind of look at it from all of those angles? But also the other really important thing for me and in any situation is finding the funny. Where's the funny? Where's the fun in this? What could I poke at? You know, like, I'll give you an example. Last night, you know, my husband and I are getting ready to go to bed, and he knows that one of my pet peeves is that when, let's say, if we're laying on the couch and we're watching TV and all the lights are out, right? I cannot stand it if I have to go into a brightly lit room the next thing, you know, like if we go into the bedroom, then like, why are all the lights on? Like the Luxor or something hotel is shining in my eyes. I'm like, why would you do that to me? I just got all relaxed and now I'm like blinded. So he knows I drives me crazy. So he'll go ahead of me and he'll be like, you know, he'll tell the Google, if I say it, she's going to talk, and he'll be like, okay, you know, you turn all the lights out. And so last night I could hear him doing it and she wouldn't do it. And I'm standing in the hall like this, like, I don't want to look at the bright light. And finally we get it to go out and I walk in and I trip over something in the middle of the floor. I go, what? Now I can't even see anything. And he's like, oh my God, because he just put the lights out because I was complaining that it was too bright. We turn the lights out, I trip and I blame it because I can't see anything. So as angry as I was in that moment, like legit, I had to stop and laugh and we started laughing at each other. I'm like, that's insane. That is so ridiculous. So even those moments on a daily basis, there's something there. There's always something there, you know?
Yeah. If you could go back now and rewrite your own life story, what would that look like?
Maybe a couple less marriages and divorces. I don't know. But honestly, I actually, you know, that's not true. I believe things are meant to be, and sometimes they're meant to be over in those cases. But those are valuable life lessons. And I don't know that I would really change anything, because you change one thing, it kind of has this ripple effect, like in those movies, right? Where they go back and change something. And I really like where I am now. I really do. So when I look back and go, would I change this? I mean, sure, I learned lessons. I wouldn't repeat them going forward. But oh my goodness, if I changed one of those things, what if I had never moved to New York? What if I had never met my husband now? What if, like, scary, you know? Would I be willing to give any one of those things up? No, because all of that good, bad, and the ugly is exactly what got me here. And here's,
you got so much betrayal.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, plausible maybe have never happened. So, yeah.
Leanne, thank you so much for joining us today. And if you want to know more about Leanne and her work, make sure you check out the podcast notes and we'll have all her social media links and also a link to Plausible. But you can also check it out at plausible.com and make sure you sign up. It's free to sign up and then you just subscribe to what you want to subscribe and go from there. Leanne, thank you again.
Thank you. Such a pleasure.
So Charlene, you love your dad jokes and you're just crazy about dad jokes. Much to my annoyance. And like, I'm like, you've reached your daily quota of two or three. But in all seriousness, how does humor help someone and how do you use it in your practice?
Absolutely. I often like to use humor just to create a new perspective in the way people are thinking. You see so many times people are having such a heavy burden on their shoulders, and having a bit of humor helps to lighten that up a little bit, helps to break the ice for one as well, because you're not thinking so much on the problem. Like, you have to think twice. Like, it's keeping you on your feet when you're like in humor. So when you have to think about something, it's like you're not thinking about the problem anymore. You're thinking about, oh, why is this funny? So then it really helps to lift you out of that mood.
That's really good. And if we look at humor as well, humor is all about joy. And when we're in a place of joy, when we're in a place of happiness, we actually raise our frequency or our vibration. And therefore, we are performing at another level.
Yeah.
And so humor and joy is so important if we look at them hand in hand. But the other thing is that if you are stuck in a situation or you don't have a solution, by embracing humor, you actually activate the part of your brain that is responsible for creativity.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, not every humor is going to gel with people. So look for that which really gels with you, you know, something that's going to really make you laugh out loud and like roll on the floor laughing. It really helps to get you out of there and out of your mind. And it also helps you to see things as not so serious. When you see, take a problem from a humorous perspective, it doesn't seem that bad.
Yeah. And yeah, I agree with the gelling because I don't gel with dad jokes, but you love dad jokes. But that is so true. Find a humor that works for you. And also find ways that you can bring more humor into your life. Yeah. Find ways of having fun. Find ways of seeing the joy, seeing the funny side out of serious situations. Once you've gone through them, obviously you don't want to be in a situation and start laughing and people are going to think, what's wrong with you? But yeah. Fine.
You don't want to be laughing at a funeral, that's for sure.
Well, no, you don't. But, you know, you can definitely laugh over the memories that you shared afterwards, with that person, yeah. You know. So there are areas and there are places where we can find humor or we can find joy in a lot of areas of our life.
Thank you for joining us on the Rewrite Your Story podcast.
We hope you found this episode enlightening.
For more information on the topics discussed, please visit our website at stephenandcharlene.com.
Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform. Share it with your friends and follow us on social media at Stephen and Charlene.
Until next time, stay informed and inspired.
This is Stephen and Charlene signing off from the Rewrite Your Story podcast. Thank you and stay blessed.